All right, glad you're with us. I don't even know, and this is rare, where this show is headed, because the news that we have to cover is so vast, fascinating, amazing to me, important to me, and it's just one of those days where I'm like sitting here, what is going on? We've got the CNN fake news lawsuit suing the Trump administration and top aides for revoking poor Jimmy Acosta's press pass. You read this, it is hilarious. And CNN's not banned. How many times does a president of the United States of America have to say, after he answered the question, that's enough, that's enough, that's enough, that's enough, before the reporter is respectful to the president? And it's not a First Amendment issue in any way, shape, manner, or form, and we'll get into all of the details of that. A lot of palace intrigue going on about General Kelly and what's happening there. We will get a report on, what's happening in California is scary. We have 200 people missing, and a number of people already we know have confirmed have died. These fires, there's one in the north, one in Southern California, in the Malibu area. They're devastating. So we'll get to that. What's going on with General Kelly and rumors about Secretary Nielsen? I don't know what to say or put in about all of that, but we will find out. And just a lot to get to. There's news of a possible indictment as it relates to Mueller. I'm assuming whatever's coming, and Jerome Corsi thinks he is going to be indicted. Remember Jerome Corsi, the Swift Boat Vets for Truth? He was a big active player in the, quote, what they called the birther issue, Barack Obama's birth certificate. And he went on the air, and he thinks that Mueller is going to charge him in this probe under close associate of Roger Stone. Roger's been on this program saying he thinks that they're going to do that. We'll get into that in the course of the program today. Is this what it's come down to? This is a very scary thing. When you really think about this, if you're called before the special counsel or you're called before FBI guys come knocking on your door, whatever the topic happens to be, my inclination would be, okay, let me help you. You know, let me tell the truth. Let me help you any way I can. If you talk to any good lawyer, any lawyer that knows the law, they will all say nothing, no matter what. In the case of the Mueller, you know, I've gone in great detail what I don't like about the team that he has put around him. The Andrew Weissmans, the Jeannie Rays, and, you know, Jeannie Ray was the lawyer for the Clinton Foundation. The conflicts are unbelievable to me. And then you've got Weissman. I mean, you can't have a guy that's been more wrong more often than him. And what started out as Trump-Russia collusion, you know, 18 months later, no evidence of collusion. And so the only thing they've got is, oh, okay, we'll get General Flynn, who both FBI agents that interviewed him said he didn't lie, but he still got charged with lying. And he's bankrupt. He's had to sell his house, life and reputation destroyed for lying to the FBI, but the FBI guys that interviewed him didn't think he lied. I mean, what's going on here? Martha Stewart, they couldn't get her for the underlying crime of, I guess, having insider trader knowledge of some sort. And so she gets, what, a year or whatever period of time in jail for lying. Well, why would anybody talk to anybody at that point? You're better off just shutting your mouth, letting the attorneys handle it. And if they can't, obviously, if they could get these people on the underlying crimes, they would. And that would be George Papadopoulos, General Flynn, if Corsi is right in his case. By the way, he was a veteran. He did serve his country. General Flynn did serve his country for 30 years. And, you know, you've heard the term perjury traps. They're real. And some people that I have such deep, profound respect for the FBI and law enforcement. That's my whole family growing up. My mom, a prison guard. My dad, a family court probation guy. You know, so many of my relatives, NYPD. Two relatives, distant. My grandfather's brother's kids made it to the FBI. Amazing people. Met them, and I'm like, wow. You know, it was like deity in the family. And I still have that respect. All our reporting on the deep state, all our reporting on these top echelon people involved in all of the issues from an exoneration before investigation, a witch hunt into Trump, to we've got an insurance policy, we've got a leak strategy, we had no evidence, to FISA courts being literally lied to and fraud committed and leaking raw intelligence that Hillary had bought and paid for to impact elections. It's all real. And of course, we have the Florida recount, Georgia recount. We have a lot of news on that today. So it is, we'll see what this is. I've got to believe that this is now going to come to an end. I would expect that whatever is going on, whatever has been happening in the interim, while we have been busy following elections and now recounts and everything else, that Russia issue is going to heat up again and probably very shortly. Here is the most unbelievable story, though, in terms of politics. You have a top Democrat, according to Politico, Elijah Cummings, very influential House Democrat, pleading with colleagues yesterday and incoming House freshmen to reject the efforts a small group of Democrats, he said, is trying to generate opposition to Nancy Pelosi's bid for the speakership. And he wrote a dear colleague letter to the incoming class of Democrats arguing that the American people obliterated the theory that Nancy Pelosi could not lead House Democrats to victory. And Cummings offered a preview of how Pelosi's allies will attempt to counter arguments that she's overstayed her welcome as a Democratic leader. She's led the party in the House for 16 years, has been a divisive figure that has jeopardized Democratic gains in swing districts. Look, nobody in the media, there's a reason why the media is not and has not talked about the election results. Because by almost every measure, for them, what they had predicted, what they fought for, what they hoped for, never materialized. And that, of course, the major massive blue wave. And the guy that beat them again, well, you the people, you went out and voted. Listen, it's always in our hands. Now, they did get the House. All right, I would prefer to win it all. I like winning it all. Not a big majority by any stretch, by any means at all. And so we see now where they're headed. They're finally revealing. I went through all this yesterday. They're now revealing all the investigations. There's now 100 of them they want to begin against Trump. And I'll analyze this later. This is going to all boomerang right back on them. To watch the fighting, it is almost worth the price of admission. The Democrats already are at each other's throats, which I'll explain in a second, too. But for the president, if you compare 2010, that was Obama's first midterm. Obama lost six Senate seats, and he lost, now get this, a whopping 63 House seats, 69 seats total. If you look at Bill Clinton, he lost 8 Senate seats, and I believe it was 52 House seats. Okay, Donald Trump, it looks like, picked up 3 Senate seats, assuming, of course, in Florida. And he did it. He went out. He fought. And it is a good thing that he did because, as he said, well, if the Democrats want all these investigations, well, we can play the same game, too, because we've got the Senate. And that is all true. But watching what's happening here, Nancy Pelosi is literally hanging on by her fingernails here as Democratic colleagues are trying to pry the speaker's gavel out of her hands. So desperate, Politico reports, she's now making gender a central part of her bid to reclaim the speaker's gavel. Remember, a lot of these Democrats, well, they lied. They basically said, and to have any shot, they had to say, oh, I wouldn't vote for Pelosi. So they're in a pickle. They're in a box right now. And she, and again, the moderate Democrat, any myth of that is just an illusion. There's no such thing as a moderate Democrat. But in arguing that she's, quote, best qualified for the job, she and her allies are now framing, according to Politico, I'm reading from them, a Pelosi victory is a matter of protecting political progress for women at a critical moment. In other words, the gender card. Push her out. Men may take over the party at a time when more than 100 women are headed to Capitol Hill after female voters have been thoroughly alienated by President Trump. Embrace her. She'll prioritize legislation empowering women on issues ranging from equal pay to anti-harassment legislation. I think it would look ridiculous if we win back the House. We have a pink wave with women who have brought back the House, and you're not going to elect a leader who led the way. That was one of the arguments quoted in Politico. And, you know, the headline is Pelosi warns against ousting a woman. Now, here's where it gets even more interesting. You have this socialist, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the new really radical left-wing congresswoman from New York, joining a protest today, this morning, inside Pelosi's office, calling for immediate action on climate change. Now, this is the amazing thing. Democrats have no agenda. They've ran on one thing. Impeach Trump, investigate Trump. It is the Pelosi destroy Trump Democratic House. And watching all of these hardcore left wingers and, you know, say, by the way, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez actually said she can't afford an apartment in D.C. There's one little itsy-bitsy problem. She actually can. She apparently has $15,000 in the bank. She spent her Friday night making macaroni and cheese and flirting with the idea of running for president in the future during some live Instagram Q&A session that she did, which I thought was pretty entertaining also. Let me make the quick prediction, and we'll get into more details, and then we'll get to the Florida recount and everything that's happening there. They are going to so overplay their hand. They are going to so misinterpret these results. Compared to the losses of Obama in his first midterm and the losses of Clinton in his first midterm, this was a massive victory for the Republicans and Donald Trump. And that's why the media won't talk about it. That's why they've all moved on to other things. They do not want to touch this. Thanksgiving is just around the corner, and as you sort out family gatherings, travel plans, well, don't forget about those you will be missing at the festivities this year. Now, a gorgeous bouquet of multicolored roses is the perfect way to show family and friends just how much you're thinking about them this season. And right now, 1-800-Flowers is giving you, my listeners, an exclusive 24 for 24 offer. That's 24 multicolored roses, $24, $1 a rose. And by the way, they're beautiful. The best flowers ever. 1-800-Flowers. It's the perfect gift that'll bring smiles for all fall celebrations. Multicolored roses, 1-800-Flowers, picked at their peak, shipped overnight to ensure freshness. That's 24 multicolored roses, $24, an amazing holiday offer. For bouquets guaranteed to make anybody smile, just choose 1-800-Flowers. Now to order the stunning bouquet of 24 multicolored roses, $24, just go to 1-800-Flowers.com/Hannity. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/Hannity. This offer ends Friday. I mean, let me just go through all the I mean, I love that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she's now thinking of running for president, can't afford a house, and flirting with a run for the presidency and becoming the chief opponent of Nancy Pelosi in a, you know, I guess a sit down. And Nancy Pelosi is literally, according to Politico, using the gender card to win. Let me tell you what's going to happen. And it's not even I'll warn them and they won't be able to control themselves because the crazy left now dominates the Democratic Party. I mean, the resistance, the radicals, the people that I think I quoted yesterday when I was citing that poll about, you know, the thinking Republicans are evil, racist, sexist, whatever else, you know, they 60+% believe that part. 20-some percent thought the Democrats thought Republicans are evil. By the way, and it was in reverse. Republicans don't think very much of Democrats, to be fair here. But this is what's going to happen. They're not going to learn the lessons. For example, when Republicans got 54 seats in 1994, and I think it was a total of 8 Senate seats lost. That was 94 was 2 years into the Clinton presidency. That was the biggest gain of seats for either party since 1948. What happened with Obama was even worse because he lost 6 Senate seats and I think it was 60, 61, 2 or 3 House seats. It was, I think it was 69 total. I mean, massive. Trump's wins in the Senate and far fewer seats lost devastated the media, devastated the Democratic Party. They think this is a mandate. Well, 44 Republicans had retired. You had a slate of some horrible candidates out there. And to be fair, Republicans, they kind of blew it on a few issues and it pissed people off. So I'm going to tell you what they're going to do next. We also have the Acosta lawsuit, much more straight ahead. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program. All right, this is a really eerie thing. First of all, the people in California, I'm so sorry so many of you are going through this. I'm looking at this, and it is scary. For 5 years of my life, I lived in Santa Barbara, California. By the way, I was the poorest person in town, except for the guys. There was a big tree that there were a lot of homeless people in Southern California and Santa Barbara at the time. But I mean, a very expensive place to live, beautiful part of the country. It's on the 101 freeway. I mean, the Pacific Coast Highway. If you haven't taken that trip one day, just drive it. And it is majestic. It's beautiful. And anyway, so we've got these wildfires going on, and what is really scary as you're watching it is you've got this. This is so out of control. As the Drudge report had up, it's the deadliest in American history, this inferno. And a woman was, apparently this might have started because of sparks from some power lines. You have new blazes. You have winds blowing, you know, at some point 60 mile an hour winds. That's not helping at all. It's just blowing the fire all over the place. You have 200 people still missing. You got more than 90 first responders themselves that have lost homes. You have evacuees, you know, back to deal with nothing but ashes and the smoke. You know, according to one report I read, may actually go all the way to the East Coast. This was on Drudge, too. And, quote, everybody's at risk from the bad air. And Malibu, Hollywood sites destroyed. Sad stories about what's been happening to animals. I actually saw James Woods on Twitter. He's so funny and outrageous. And he loves to cross lines. I thought he got banned permanently, but I guess they allowed him back on. And he's like the only not liberal in Hollywood, but apparently like Alyssa Milano, you might remember she was sitting in the hearings with the lawyers or friends of Professor Ford, very radical left wing, hates Trump. But she tweeted out, "Is anyone can help me get rid of move 5 horses that were in jeopardy?" And you know, James Wood said, "If anyone can help, let's help," which I like. And I think people should do. Anyway, Joe Bastardi, you know, actually predicted this, and it's kind of a freak out. When did you send this email? I was not the one that remembered it. Linda remembered it, that you had predicted that something like this could happen out there, and I wondered why.
Well, back in last year, we started in March this year, May 17th. So what happens is when, first of all, California, because of the policies out there There are 42 million people living out there now. There were 14, 15 million people back in the 1950s. There's so many people living in places that are now susceptible to this, and so many policies, and the president largely had it right when he was saying what he was saying about the policies out there. We have 129 million dead trees in California.
And why don't they chop them down?
Well, there it is right there, that the PGE wants to take those down. And a bipartisan bill was passed in 2017 to help fund that, and it was vetoed by Governor Jerry Brown. And, folks, I'm going to tell you something right now. You can't stop these things. These are part of nature. But you can mitigate them. And we have a lot of people. We have progress. We have these power lines up. The slightest sparks can cause this. But what you're seeing being done here by Governor Brown when he turns around and says it's climate change is right out of the book of Saul Alinsky. Simply blame somebody else for a problem that you might be complicit in. Now, if I were him, given he vetoed the very bill that can help out with this, I wouldn't be saying things about, it's this guy's fault or that guy's fault. And it is amazing watching this go on. I call it climate ambulance chasing. It's in that book I have out on the Climate Chronicles. This is exactly what is going on. Now,
I don't want to get too into like the debate over.
Right.
But let me tell you, there's going to be plenty of time post fire. What I'm really, you know, at this point, it's got to be all hands on deck. We have people in trouble. We have people's lives in jeopardy, and their homes, everything they own in jeopardy. And I know that
what I'm saying, Sean, is it is the nature of the game. When you get rainy springs or winters in California, in this particular case, you had a dry winter and then a wet spring. Guess what happens? More vegetation grows. The fact is, and folks that have lived in California 50, 60 years know you have a dry climate in the summer. And if you get a lot of rain, that stuff is going to dry out in the summer season and provide even more fuel. The crazy thing about this is, to some extent, is if you know that kind of thing is happening, you should understand the risk that's going to happen every year. There's going to be some strong wind cases, the Santa Ana winds, because that's what the atmosphere does. It's not like this is anything new.
Now how many dead trees? In December of 2017, I got cut off on my page. The U.S. Forest Service announced California had how many dead trees?
129 million dead trees on 8.9 million acres. But as Tree Mortality Task Force, it only removed about 1 million. I'm just saying this. Look, when you combine what is going on, what has been happening, you look at the situation, and in May, on May 17th, we quite publicly said another big wildfire season is on the way, so you should be getting ready, and you should expect things like this to happen. We are putting people, you know what, I'm an environmentalist.
But they do have a fire season. All right, go ahead, finish your thought. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I apologize.
But what I'm saying is you can't – yeah, it's like people say to me, oh, the hurricanes are doing this. You can't just put houses on beaches and expect nothing to happen. You cannot build on land all over the place, expect to have this go on, and not see nature try to take its toll. And the interaction between man and nature, we have power lines up, we have to have energy. And so what happens is, if you don't go clear the trees, if you don't say to yourself, wow, we had a rainy spring, guess what that means? We better start taking preparations and understand what can happen. This is what's going to happen. So on May 17th, we issued that forecast. And it's not
May 17th of this year, you said this was a dangerous, this would be a particularly dangerous year for this, for the weather issues you mentioned. I understand.
By the way, Sean. No. Sean, yep. The same thing, believe it or not, when you have a dry winter in California, wet spring, there's usually an El Nino coming on. Bang, that led to the summer forecast, led to the hurricane forecast, and the cold, stormy winter that we've been saying since August is coming this year, and it's going to get started. Now, all this, my point is, folks, and I'm sorry I'm getting charged up over here. What happens is All this stuff is linked together naturally, one thing after another. What men have to do is they have to quit blaming nature and sit there and say, well, if we're going to coexist with nature, how do we do things to mitigate these things? And one of the things you can do is clear out as much of this dead wood and the brush and all this other stuff.
Why is there reluctance? Why, if they passed the bill and were willing to fund this, what was the resistance? No. I'm not trying to make this political. Why would they resist doing that? You know, especially if you're talking about brush and dead trees. I'll never forget it. Look, it was horrible. Santa Barbara is one of the most beautiful places in the world. And I was fortunate enough to actually live there for years of my life. Not many, but a number. And, I mean, it's spectacular. And then I went back. There was a big fire in what was known, a really nice neighborhood known as the Hope Ranch area. And the Santa Ynez Mountains, if I recall the name properly. All these beautiful mountains and, you know, I think it's where Michael Jackson, where Ronald Reagan lived, by the way. That's where Reagan, he had his ranch up there. But here's my point. And I drive through this neighborhood, and it's gone. It's like,
Even the logging industry, the logging industry is continuing its free fall in California. All these things are going on. So there's some of these things we can't stop what nature is going to do.
How do we get these fires under control? That's what I want to know. Because,
well, we need the weather to cooperate. We got another, it looks like another windy day tomorrow. The winds drop off Thursday, and it's going to start raining next week. And the core of the wildfire season is going to come to an end next week. But when you're looking at these things, and you can get a jump on it in the spring, believe it or not, if you actually look at the statistics, when California was in the drought, the so-called perma drought, they're screaming and yelling about drought. If that drought had not reversed, we had several years where we were below normal with the amount of wildfires.
Listen, they've had so many droughts. I remember when I was there, they were talking about desalinization plants because they had no water.
It's California. It is a dry climate. So this is my appeal to people. What I'm trying to say, folks, nature's going to do what nature's going to do. If you want to coexist with nature, you have to work with nature. Adopt policies that can mitigate these things. You're never going to shut it out completely, and you have to pay attention to what the weather has done. What the weather is doing today was set up 5, 6, 7 months ago, years ago, and it's pointing to where the weather's going to go also.
Well,
and when you
look,
get
we're
going to
have
flow, you understand things.
Look, my main concern now is to get people safe, to protect as much property as we can, get these fires out.
These are much harder to predict than hurricanes, Sean.
Listen, there's going to be plenty of time to debate all of this. Look, if we need 129 million dead trees taken out, that's a lot of jobs for people. And I'm serious. I mean,
I agree with you.
And cleaning the brush out, you know what? We could do a lot of good work there. I don't know what the political ramifications or debates are, but I know you couldn't, for example, farmers had no water in the San Joaquin Valley because of the Delta smelt, which was ridiculous. I did a show out there about that. But
you know what?
It's not climate change.
Don't blame climate change for everything. I mean, why do you have to do that? You have to look at the total picture all the time.
Why don't we? Everyone says, "Oh, the science has been decided." Why don't they just have a discussion how to save people in the future from this devastation? It's horrible. But I got to run. Thank you, Joe Bastardi, WeatherBell.com, the official meteorologist. Our prayers are with all of you in California, and it's. It's scary how big this thing is. It really is devastating. John is in Vegas, KDON Radio. What's up, John? How are you?
Hi, Sean, Mr. Hannity.
Yes,
sir. Very excited to talk to you. I know there's a lot of important stuff going on in the country, so I'm going to try to be quick. I'm a huge fan.
Thank you.
But I was not as big of a fan as my great-grandfather was.
Wow.
He passed away last week.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's painful.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't think I'd get emotional. But okay, so he was a World War II vet, and he listened to your show pretty much every single day.
Wow. Wow.
His name, he was Sergeant Mike Riley of the United States Army.
Yes, sir.
Everyone just knew him as Sarge. That's what I called him. He loved your show. He was always afraid to call in. He was worried. he'd be terrible on the radio.
I wish he did.
He probably would have stumbled and been awkward. He was not cut out for radio. But anyways, let me tell you
about these guys, because I lost my dad. He served 4 years in the Pacific. We had Veterans Day yesterday. You know, Brokaw once referred to it as the greatest generation. I mean, they were the greatest generation. They built this country. They sacrificed. You know, my parents, they just, everything was for their kids, for their future. Nothing about themselves. Amazing, giving, selfless people risking their lives. Well, I'm sorry for you and your family, and he's in our prayers. You and your family are in your prayers. I don't care how old somebody is. When you lose them, it's painful.
And I appreciate that, and I will just leave it with this. I'd like to give you the highest honor he could bestow upon any of his great-grandkids or friends or anything. I want to give you an honorable Sarge salute. Thank you, Mr. Hannity. Thank you for everything you do. You are a real American.
I'm humbled, and I am honored. Thank you, sir. And my many prayers to you and your family. I know people like him are in a much better place. I believe that with all my heart, that there is another world for us to head to next. And I know he's there. Thank you, sir. It means a lot. All right, we've got a lot to get to. We're going to get into this election. I'm going to give you the updates on what's going on in Florida, what's going on in Georgia, also the turmoil within the Democratic Party. Newt Gingrich is checking in with us. And, you know, we'll also check in with our legal team, Greg Jarrett, David Schoen. Of course, this whole issue of Acosta, we'll get to that. Joe Concha is coming. Mike Rowe, I love Mike Rowe, especially when he hosted that show, Dirty Jobs. Oh, besh, I love that show. Shows you how great Americans are, like John's great-grandfather. Amazing people. All right, glad you're with us. Hour two, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program? All right, we have so much news. We've got CNN's Acosta lawsuit, which on so many levels is ridiculous, flawed in their analysis. Well, I'll get to all the details of that. We've got the recount going on down in Florida and all of the issues involving corruption, laws not abided by, but only in two counties. And the 65 of 67 counties did this all right. We've got turmoil in the Democratic Party, and infighting already has broken out, and literally an attempt to prevent Nancy Pelosi from becoming speaker, and literally the gender card now being played. Here to weigh in on all of this is former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich. By the way, Brenda Snipes has now told the Miami Herald, the Broward County, who's in charge of Broward County and all that has gone on, that in fact it might be time for her to move on. Jeb Bush has said she should be removed from office. And the, you know, we've gone through the history of attacks here. And we even had Broward County ballots found in a Fort Lauderdale rent-a-car. That's how bad this is. And we've gone over the history of all of this. Joining us now, Mr. Speaker, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. And I do want to point out that this is a person who shouldn't just be removed from office, but she ought to be on trial. I mean, the number of laws she's broken, the number of court injunctions she's ignored, the whole procedure there, you know, I refuse to believe if you find out that your local bank is short $3 million, that it's just an accounting error. I think it's much more likely to be theft.
Unless Mr. Potter stole it. Remember and It's a Wonderful Life? Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. That's exactly right. And yeah. So if you think about it, but if you watch what she has done over the years and you watch this most recent example, no normal person could reach any conclusion except this is theft. This is a deliberate, willful attempt to steal a U.S. Senate seat and, if possible, steal a governorship. And it does far more damage. I mean, after all the left screaming about Russian collusion and all that stuff, the Democrats are doing much more damage to our process of free elections than Putin ever thought possible.
You know, we have, 15,000 new ballots that just magically appeared in Palm Beach County. Almost 80,000 so-called uncounted votes turning up days and days and days after the elections. Now, Florida law is clear. It is unambiguous that the canvassing board shall report all early voting and all tabulated vote-by-mail results to the Department of State within 30 minutes after the polls close. And the canvassing board shall report, with the exception of provisional ballots, updated precinct election results to the department every 45 minutes. 65 counties abided by and complied with that law, except these two. And, you know, it appears when you look at everything that has gone on here that it is, and then you look at the history of it, you can't help but think there's something drastically wrong year in and year out here. Why it is allowed to continue is even more shocking.
Well, of course there's something drastically wrong. These are people who do not believe that they can win an honest election. They do not believe they can win an election in only which legal Americans are allowed to vote. And so, as you know, in I think Broward County, they actually had the Democratic lawyers arguing that illegal immigrants should be allowed to vote and their votes should count. And so,
by the way, they did make that argument. They made that argument before a judge. They objected when a ballot was rejected because it was from a person that is not a legal resident.
Right. And that fits, of course, with what we're seeing across the whole country.
Mm-hmm. You know, here's what we now know. We know the track record here. We know that last week that Brenda Snipes, quote, accidentally, Mr. Speaker, mixed in rejected provisional ballots with hundreds of valid ballots. That means the entire vote now has been irreversibly corrupted. And in August of this past year, a judge ruled that Snipes systematically mishandled mail-in absentee ballots. In 2017, a judge ruled that she illegally destroyed ballots following a primary race. In 2016, Broward County election results were posted online before the polls even closed. And in 2012, 1,000 uncounted absentee ballots were mysteriously discovered in Broward County a week after the election. And then in 2004, Snipes simply just lost track of 6,000 absentee ballots. This is not a one-off, Mr. Speaker. All right, we apparently just lost the speaker. There is no question. You know, I just went through the history, 2004, 2012, 2016, 2017. In August, a judge ruled Snipes mishandled mail-in absentee ballots, and she accidentally mixed in this election rejected provisional ballots with several hundred valid votes, Mr. Speaker.
Right. Well, the point I want to make to people is this is not an accident. This is not some nice, pleasant person who in between, baking cookies and serving apple cider happened to have a boo-boo. There is a pattern in the Democratic Party, which in my own lifetime goes back at least to the 1960 election and the theft of Illinois and Texas by the Democrats. There's a continuing pattern that when things get close enough, if they think they can steal it, they will. That's what happened, frankly, to Senator Norm Coleman in Minnesota, where all of a sudden after the election, I think some 800 ballots showed up that didn't exist before the election. We've seen that happen again and again and again, and we're watching it play out right now in Florida.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know that, and by the way, it's not we got some similar issues, not as profound in Florida. In Georgia, Gateway Pundit put out a report that the Georgia Democratic Party announced on Saturday. Now, the election was on Tuesday, that a handful of Georgia counties have suddenly now discovered thousands of new votes that needed to be counted. And the interesting part is the Democrats say, well, that new stash included absentee, early and election day votes, but weren't counted. And guess what? They found 5,569 votes, of which 4,804 were for Stacey Abrams. Now, that's 85%. That's a pretty good voting margin because she wasn't winning Georgia by 85%.
No, But that's what you're seeing happen all around the country. I mean, what you have is a deliberate, systematic use of a variety of things like provisional ballots. The number of people who may not legally be American citizens who are being allowed to vote under these provisional ballots, as you yourself pointed out, in Florida, it's just blatantly open, and there's just no question that there are specific people, and in fact, the Democratic Party lawyers were arguing for including people who are illegal immigrants as voters in an American election.
Unbelievable. I don't know how all of this is going to play out, but I'm very concerned. And I don't know how you go from a 57,000 vote margin lead, and every day it's another 10, another 10, another 10,000, 10,000, 10,000. I've never seen anything like this. It scares me. Let me ask you, and I'll get into this in more detail with Joe Concha later. So Jim Acosta's press credentials were removed. And, of course, the White House correspondent. There's a great piece in lawandcrime.com. It's a great website. And I read this, and they rightly point out in this piece that, in fact, it is false in what they're saying in the lawsuit. Acosta didn't just ask a question. How many times does the president have to say that's enough and somebody tries to move on to another reporter after he answered the question and the president gets to say, you're too rude, you've been rude to my press secretary, that you can say, sorry, you're not meeting the protocol to be here in the respect this House deserves?
Look, I mean, this is a very important, I think, very useful debate for the American people. This handful of professional left-wing anti-Trump reporters don't have an automatic legal right to be in the White House. I mean, nobody ever said that Acosta somehow is superior to every other American citizen. If the average citizen went up to the White House tomorrow morning and said, hi, I'd like to go to the press conference, they'd laugh at him. They'd say, you have no credentials. What's your guarantee? And what you have now is that the elite media, the anti-Trump liberal media, has arrogated to itself a belief in its own importance that it's somehow a legally entitled, special class, and that the President of the United States has no choices except to allow this special class, these privileged reporters, to do whatever they want to. I argued over a year ago, put them all out of the White House. Send them over to the old executive office building. Send them anywhere. But don't treat them as though they are a privileged aristocracy of the media who are allowed to act like lords and ladies and be arrogant and ignorant and nasty. And we still have to call on him. And Acosta, of course, has worked overtime. I mean, this is a guy who was unknown before Donald Trump. He's desperately working to make his career as the Sam Donaldson of the Trump era. And so he's deliberately nasty, deliberately confrontational. I don't care who the president is. No president of the United States has to put up with that kind of abuse.
Let me move on. We have now 100 separate issues where Democrats, the things that they didn't tell us before the election, that they want all investigations. It's like the Nancy Pelosi hate destroy Trump Congress of this year. Now, by standards, this was a good election year, especially Obama loses 6 Senate seats and, 63 House seats. Clinton lost 8 Senate seats, 54 House seats. I mean, Donald Trump gained three Senate seats. They don't have a big margin in the House, but there's a big fight. Nancy Pelosi, Elijah Cummings is trying to help her. She's now playing a bit. I think it would be ridiculous to win back the House with a pink wave, and you're not going to elect the leader who led the way. And so that's now the headline is in Politico, Pelosi warns against ousting a woman. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is now protesting in Pelosi's office over things. What about all this infighting? This is going to be pretty interesting to watch.
Sure. People just need to remember that the great drama never quite ends. Now you're going to have, first of all, the biggest single loser election night was Chuck Schumer, the Democratic leader in the Senate. Who has now consistently been losing, and at some point his conference is going to turn him biting, and his activists are going to bite him because he's not getting anything done. He can't stop Trump's judges. He can't stop the tax cut. He can't stop the things that matter. And he's losing seats. And at some point, Schumer may be the biggest single loser. Second, Nancy Pelosi is going to have a significant minority in her party who want to work with the president. I think there are 16 Democrats who just got elected from districts that Trump carried. Well, they don't want to go into 2020 as anti-Trump Democrats. And so the pressure on them to find ways to work with the president. Remember, if Joe Manchin had not voted yes on Judge Kavanaugh, he would almost certainly have been wiped out. And so I think as you come into this next cycle, the pressure on her from both the right and the left is going to be amazing to watch. She's already the most unpopular politician in the country.
And I want to ask you one question about
a great symbol of the Democratic Party.
One question, and when we get back, I want to ask you how Republicans need to deal with this. More with Newt Gingrich. On the other side, Joe Concha, the legal side. What crimes were committed down in Florida? We know crimes were committed. All right, as we roll along, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN, our number as we continue with Newt Gingrich. We don't have a lot of time. How do Republicans deal with the fact that now they're revealing they want 100 investigations into Trump?
Oh, I think we make it very clear. Look, I lived through this, and frankly, we didn't handle it all that well. You were there at the time. And I think Clinton brilliantly played off our serious and legitimate efforts and got people to decide, you know, do you want to have investigations or do you want to have progress? And ultimately, the country decided they wanted to move forward. The Democrats are in real danger, I think. And let me say up front. As a person who believes in our Constitution, I think the legislative branch has a serious obligation to investigate where it thinks something is wrong. And I strongly support whether it's a Democratic Congress or a Republican Congress, they have every right to investigate. But if the country begins to figure out that this is just a witch hunt, that this is not serious, it's not about improving things, it's sort of gotcha, what will happen is it'll turn sour very fast. Now, not for the hardline left-wingers. They'll love it. They'll be thrilled by it. But the average, you know, the independents, the people who are going to make the decision in 2020, they're going to look up and say, boy, if the Democratic Party is purely destructive and purely negative, I don't think that's good for the future of America.
All right, Mr. Speaker, thank you for being with us. So in Florida, what specific laws do we know that were broken? And how do we get this fixed? Greg Jarrett, David Schoen, later Mike Rowe, Joe Concha on Acosta and CNN's fake news lawsuit.
Is clearly a sore loser. He can't stand the fact that he's not going to be elected for what, the first time in decades, and he won't. He's just here to steal this election. That's what he's done. That his lawyer came down here and said, "I'm here to win the election. I'm not here to get a free and fair election. Make sure votes are counted." No, he wants to win the election. That's his only purpose.
All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. Brenda Snipes saying, "Oh, this office." And I am first time ever in this office. I have been under attack. Not true. The lieutenant governor on the consequences for Brenda Snipes. Nothing is off the table. We now know an investigation is ongoing with the attorney general and Florida law enforcement are now up to their eyeballs in all of this. And Rick Scott blasting Bill Nelson, which, by the way, is the right thing to do. You know, the idea that this has never happened before is just inaccurate. It's false. It's not true. We know for the track record in Broward, especially, and Palm Beach to a lesser extent, is atrocious. They've been allowed to continue in this powerful position. How it's happened, I don't know. It's beyond comprehension. You know, we learned that just last week that Snipes, quote, accidentally mixed in what were rejected provisional ballots with several hundred valid votes, which means the entire vote count is now irreversibly corrupted. And this past August, the judge ruled that Snipes systematically mishandled mail-in absentee ballots. And in 2017, a judge also ruled that she illegally destroyed ballots from a primary, following a primary race. That was the Debbie Wasserman Schultz case. And we have Broward County election results were posted online in 2016 before the polls had even closed. And you go back to 2012, 1,000 uncounted absentee ballots mysteriously discovered in Broward County a week after the election. You can even go back to 2004, where Snipes simply just lost track of 6,000 absentee ballots. How do you lose track of this? You know, this now, how do you go from 57,000, a 57,000 vote lead, to where we are now, around 12,000 plus? Jeb Bush, who appointed Brenda Snipes, says it's time for her to be removed from office. Florida election supervisor, you know, has this history. Broward County ballots were found in a Fort Lauderdale rent-a-car. That was big news yesterday. And, of course, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, oh, she was happy that those ballots were destroyed before the legal time that it was allowed. A lot of laws have been broken. We also have a case in Georgia, Gateway Pundit reporting, that, in fact, 80% of new ballots that were discovered in the governor's race, oh, of the 5,569 votes, 4,804 went for Stacey Abrams. They found these Saturday. Joining us now to get into all of this and what the legal remedy is, what the crimes might be in this case, now that it's an ongoing criminal investigation, Greg Jarrett, author of the number one bestseller, The Russia Hoax, Fox News legal analyst. David Schoen is with us, civil liberties attorney, criminal defense attorney. Thank you both for being here. Let's start with the law, Greg, and specifically, if we now have this investigation ongoing, well, we know certain laws were violated, which I've been listing every day.
Oh, they were. Brenda Snipes is the epitome of gross incompetence and recklessness. She managed to break just about every election law you can think of. She missed every statutory deadline. She was spanked by the judge for that. She mixed up valid ballots with invalid ones. She suddenly and magically discovered tens of thousands of ballots that inexplicably appeared out of nowhere. But here's the problem, Sean. Florida laws, you can break with impunity. These election laws are, for the most part, civil violations. They have no teeth. Now, there are several election fraud statutes. Three different Florida departments say so far they haven't seen fraud, but their investigation has been cursory at best. So as you point out, it is good that Pam Bondi, the Attorney General, has ordered a complete and thorough investigation to determine if crimes have been committed. Is Snipes capable of fraud? Absolutely. You know, several months ago, a judge determined she unlawfully destroyed ballots. That does not happen accidentally. That is intentional. And every election she's handled for the last 16 years, every one of them, have been marred by her incompetence, if not corruption.
David Schoen, your thoughts legally.
Well, legally and as a matter of policy, I mean, the whole situation is very, very troubling. These deadlines for certification are set for a reason. There's an important public interest in finality. It's true. Everybody in an ideal world wants to see every eligible voter's vote count. But there's a reason, again, that we set limits to this. These provisional ballots, you know, for example, in Georgia, there are 21,900 provisional ballots. Provisional ballots means people with this question about their eligibility. They may have voted in the wrong precinct or something like that. This judge in Georgia now has changed the certification deadline from this evening until Friday. No one knows whether they're going to be able to count all of those provisional ballots, determine eligibility questions on all of them. But it's very, very suspicious that this is coming up at the last minute in the Florida race and the Georgia race. It was so hotly contested, and that all of the question now is on one side of the ledger.
Well, you know, the thing that we all have to look at here, there's 67 counties in Florida, Greg. 65 of the Florida counties all complied with the law, including every county in the panhandle of Florida that was absolutely ravaged by Hurricane Michael just 27 days prior. Broward, Palm Beach County, well, they, you know, county officials continue to tally tens of thousands of votes. That was in violation of state law. And right. Remember, we've gone over all the different laws that are involved here. And, you know, within 30 minutes after the polls closed, the canvassing board in all of these counties are to report early voting. all tabulated voting by mail results to the Department of State. 30 minutes. Well, that number changed six times, and nearly 80,000 plus votes added in the case of Broward County, 15,000 Palm Beach County. And we also know that, well, the canvassing board expects every 45 minutes, they expect a vote count update until the results are completely reported. That never happened. We'd go a whole day and we'd get a dump of tens of thousands of votes at 3 a.m. for crying out loud. We are never going to get the truth of what this vote is. The question is it going to be allowed to stand?
Well, the fact that 65 counties easily complied with the law, but Brenda Snipes in Broward County and Susan Butcher in Palm Beach County could not, suggests, in my judgment, more than incompetence, that something is amiss here that may be fraud. What should happen here is that the judge in Broward County, who determined that Snipes broke the law, should hold her in contempt of court. That would trigger a criminal penalty and not just a civil fine. Mm-hmm. That hasn't happened. It should happen.
David.
I want to tell you, in Broward County in particular, and there's a reason the focus is on there, they've had problem after problem, as you know from Gore Bush. But even in this most recent election, it's not just these big races. They had an election recently for a Broward County judge. When everyone went to sleep, that judge lost. He's the incumbent, very controversial guy, put in office by the union. By the next morning, they somehow found, in their words, 700 votes, and he won the election. You talk about the fox guarding the hen house. These are the local judges now who are going to be called on about certification questions and things like that. There's something rotten there.
You see, this goes back so many years, and you just it boggles the mind to know that with this history, I mean, we are talking really about just malfeasance on a massive level here. And right. We'll find out about the law. Why this person is still in that position is unbelievable to me. Let me switch topics to both of you. And I know there's been a firestorm over the fact that Matthew Whitaker has been tapped to, at least temporarily, fill the void with Jeff Sessions retiring or being asked to retire by the president. And the media is going apoplectic. And, Greg, I went to you first and I said, well, I'm listening to all these so-called fake news lawyers, and they're saying the president didn't have the right to do this. And you sent me the Federal Vacancies Act, 5 U.S.C. 3345. I'll let you explain it.
It says the president can appoint a person holding a Senate-confirmed office or, and this is the important part, quote, an officer or employee of such executive agency who has served in a position in such an agency for not less than 90 days. So Whitaker easily meets that second legal standard. And so these legal commentators I've been listening to on television and some in print are absolutely 100% wrong. And I'll tell you why I know they're wrong. Supreme Court has issued a ruling on this subject in U.S. versus Eaton. And it rejected the claim that only a principal officer confirmed by the Senate can temporarily fill the shoes of the head of a department. It said just the opposite. And then, of course, after that ruling, the Vacancies Reform Act elaborated on it and laid out the two methods by which somebody can be selected.
Listen, the language you sent is clear. It is unambiguous. And I'm thinking,
right.
These guys are supposed to be lawyers, and
right.
And yet they clearly don't know or care about what the actual law says. David, I would assume you probably agree with Greg on this.
Yeah, that's Section 3345A3. That is clear. Look, they're drawing. There is a conventional wisdom about this. You know, had to have been a person previously confirmed by the Senate. They draw on a dissenting opinion. Judge Scalia wrote in the case once it was completely dicta in the case. But listen to this. There's a motion filed now by the Attorney General of Maryland demanding that Rod Rosenstein actually be put in the position, Whitaker be stripped of it. And he's relying on this succession statute for the Justice Department that's been overridden by an executive order and by this Vacancy Reforms Act, which a court has also ruled is the later enacted statute, and therefore that controls. But can you imagine, we've talked before about separation of powers concerns and all that. The Attorney General of Maryland wants to be able to dictate that Rod Rosenstein and nobody else should
Well, I mean,
be
this
the
is the hypocrisy. I mean, Rod Rosenstein has been conflicted from the get-go, recommending right. the firing of Comey, signing the fourth FISA warrant application. He would be a witness, and yet he is in charge of the whole Mueller investigation. None of the people that are out there complaining about so-called conflicts, because Matthew Whitaker apparently thought, and rightly so, in my opinion, strong opinion, that, in fact, Mueller has exceeded his statutorial mandate by going way too far. I mean, look what the news is today. All right, so we expect Jerome Corsi, controversial figure, granted. He also served his country, and he says he expects to be indicted over lying to the to investigators. And I want to ask you both about that when we get back on the other side of it, because why would anybody ever want to testify or talk to the FBI is if they can't get you on the underlying, quote, crime, but they're always going to get you on lying, i.e. Papadopoulos, i.e. General Flynn. If Corsi is right, him too. 800-941-SEAN, our toll-free telephone number. We've got a lot more to get to in the course of the program today. Also, the CNN Acosta lawsuit and all of the different problems associated with that. All right, as we continue now with Greg Jarrett, David Schoen. All right, real quick answers. I have about 45 seconds for each of you on the idea that it looks like if Jerome Corsi's right, and they're going to go after him from Mueller's office for lying, not for any underlying crime, apparently. He believes it's just lying to either a grand jury, a special counsel, FBI, whatever it's going to end up being. Then it's the same thing with Flynn, although the FBI didn't think he lied, and the same thing with Papadopoulos. Why would anybody ever have to talk to anyone at that point? Why would they bother?
And they should have all invoked the Fifth and refused to talk, because talking to Robert Mueller will result, it doesn't matter if you tell the truth, it will result in a perjury or false statement charge, because Mueller doesn't care about the truth. He cares about prosecuting people who are supporters of Donald Trump.
I met Martha Stewart, and it was the same thing with her, David. They didn't get her on any underlying crime. It was, quote, lying about what, or an inconsistent answer. Nobody has a perfect memory. I mean, how do you tell the difference between a bad memory and a lie?
Right, and that's the point. That's the problem when you have a committee like Mueller's, which has a complete agenda, when you have people like Andrew Weissman, who've made a career out of doing this kind of trickery. You'd be crazy to go in there. Remember, under the special counsel regulation, they determine whether someone's obstructing their investigation or lying to them. Mueller and Weissman are the arbiters of the truth. One last thing I want to say, the irony of this whole conversation about Whitaker, whether he had to have been confirmed, is that there's the same legitimate argument. There's a legitimate argument about Mueller, that his appointment exceeded the appointments clause, triggered the appointments clause, and he should have had to have been confirmed by Senate because of the broad powers he's been given.
All right, I got to thank you both. David Schoen, Greg Jarrett, thank you. 800-941-SEAN. The problems for CNN and this phony lawsuit, it's all about them because Jim Acosta was rude to the president. We'll get into that. Joe Concha coming up. Also, you know Mike Rowe? Oh, he's going to join us. He's such a great guy. You ever watch him? Dirty Jobs? It's the best show ever. He's going to check in with us, and we'll get your calls in as well. Straight ahead.
May I ask one other question? Mr. President, if I may ask one other question, are you worried?
That's enough. That's enough.
Mr. President, I was going to ask one of the other folks.
That's enough.
Pardon me, ma'am.
That's enough. Put down the mic.
Mr. President, are you worried about indictments coming down in this investigation? Mr. President.
I'll tell you what, CNN should be ashamed of itself having you working for them. You are a rude, terrible person. You shouldn't be working for CNN. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. President.
I'm not responding. I'm not responding to you. I'm talking to this gentleman. Will you please sit down? Would you please sit down? Please go ahead.
CNN's argument is very straightforward, that the First Amendment is meant for the press to be able to act on behalf of the American people and the public in getting information. And here, when the White House revoked Mr. Acosta's press pass, it's clear it was based on the content of his reporting, the fact that he was asking tough questions and has been doing that. The President Trump in the White House has repeatedly challenged and attacked CNN and Mr. Acosta. Mm-hmm. And it's really a classic First Amendment viewpoint, content-based discrimination against speech. And we can't have the White House or government officials arbitrarily tossing people out of the White House or other government facilities just because they don't like what they're saying or what they're reporting. That's right. What happened here. That violates the First Amendment. CNN tried to work this out, requested that the pass be restored. Mr. Acosta was denied a day pass in France, even though the French government would have allowed him to go cover President Trump's appearance at a cemetery. But the White House has basically just been ignoring these requests. So we really had no choice but to sue. We didn't want to have to go to court. We wanted to just report the news. Mr. Acosta wants to report the news. CNN wants to report the news. So that's what the courts are for. The First Amendment and the Fifth Amendment arguments, the due process arguments, are very strong. We're asking for emergency relief because every day that this pass has been revoked is a First Amendment violation, and it's irreparable harm in the words of the law.
I'm going to move on. David, go ahead.
The president's tone towards the press obviously is not helpful at times,
Thank you,
and I
Jim.
Think that that's plain to see. There are some fears up on Capitol Hill, and we understand some in the White House, that a Democratic wave is coming and could sweep the Republicans out of power in the House, and that could potentially lead to impeachment proceedings that the Democrats could bring forward. What is the president's thinking on that? What is your thinking on that? You understand how
Andrew?
The law could be different than border security, sir. Border security could
no,
mean
actually,
drones,
I don't,
it
Jim.
Could mean agents, it could mean more fencing. It doesn't necessarily mean a physical.
And that's part of the negotiation that we expect Congress to have.
But you understand Democrats are saying that they may not be in favor of this kind of deal, but they say thanks, but no thanks for a wall.
Jim, I'm not negotiating with you. I'm going to let Congress take care of that.
What we're witnessing right now is just this erosion of our freedoms in terms of covering the president of the United States. I think that there are moments when this president is just really sensitive to criticism, and he lashes out in this fashion. That is just a strange and unpresidential thing to do, to be throwing rolls of paper towels at people. The last three news conferences, Wolf, all of the questions to the American news media have been handled by conservative press. And I think, Wolf, there's no other way to describe it, but the fix is in.
The Statue of Liberty,
Jim,
has always
Jim,
been
let me ask you a question.
Of hope to the world,
Jim,
for people to send
Jim, do you believe,
people to this country,
Jim,
and they're not always going to speak
Jim,
English, Stephen.
Jim,
they're not
do you believe,
always going to be highly skilled. They're not always
Jim,
going to be...
Jim, so Jim, I appreciate your speech.
I think we saw the president's true colors today, and I'm not sure they were red, white, and blue.
This is CNN.
All right, news roundup, information overload. It's only a small little portion of Jim Acosta and his phony moments with the president. There's a great column today by Law and Crime. It's a great website if you want to follow legal issues in the news. And it is a sister website to Dan Abrams Mediaite. And it's really good. There's great coverage. I don't always agree with it, but you get some really good information. There's a great column. I don't know who wrote it today, but it was really well done. And they're claiming that the constitutional rights of Jim Acosta and CNN have been violated here. When Acosta, how many times does a president need to say to one reporter, when he has other reporters that want to ask questions, that's enough? And when a White House aide attempted to take the microphone to give it to another reporter, after the president says 10 times, that's enough, he didn't relinquish the microphone. Now, what's great about this article is, you know, CNN's claim, well, Acosta just asked a question about one of the president's statements during the midterm. As Law and Crime pointed out, that's false. Acosta did not simply ask a question. He made a statement. He said, I want to challenge you. He's the president. On one of the statements you made in the tail end of the campaign, and he cited the president's characterization of a migrant caravan as an invasion. Well, if they make it to the border and what happened on the Mexican southern border happened here, then that would be accurate. And the president obviously wanted to get ahead of it, or the potential caravan becoming an invasion or some type of conflict. Innocent people could get hurt. It would be horrible. Anyway, as you know, Mr. President, the caravan was not an invasion. It's a group of migrants moving up from Central America towards the border of the U.S. Well, with the stated goal of walking across our borders illegally. Why did you characterize it as such? Do you think you have demonized immigrants in this election? And then it goes on from there. the president did respond to Acosta. Now, by the way, Acosta and CNN, they have an opportunity to send anybody there. Nobody shut them out completely. So the president responded regarding the characterization. He says, because I do consider it an invasion, you and I have a different opinion. And, you know, and from there, it just disintegrated. And at this point, the White House is rightly saying, and I think they're right in their characterization of this. Of course, the White House correspondence people, they love it. More grandstanding from CNN. Now, CNN claims that they are news. It's almost every second, every hour, every minute, every day bashing the president. And they have their own issues of credibility, everything from racist on down. Anyway, here to weigh in on this is Joe Concha. He's a media reporter, columnist for The Hill. He actually does his own online TV show now. Congratulations to you for that. What's your take on it? I'm pretty interested where you go with this.
Well, Sean, I think the lawsuit is silly and it's a grab for attention while, you know, making Acosta and CNN the victim, which they're both exceptionally accomplished at. CNN, as you said, can still report from the White House, just not Acosta. When you break the rules, there has to come accountability. And the bottom line is that CNN has nearly 50 other press credentials, White House press credentials. So they're certainly not locked out, right? And look, Acosta, as you said, doesn't want to report the news, as we heard in that soundbite just a little bit earlier. He wants to opine. He wants to share his feelings. He wants to act like a 47-year-old version of the captain of the debate team. And since when is it a First Amendment, by the way, to attend press briefings? Because that means, because I don't have a hard pass to the White House, I'm a media reporter, does that mean I get to go, you get to go, the guy in the grease truck outside gets to go, my local librarian gets to go? Because you're going to need a bigger boat if everybody gets to go there and ask questions of the press secretary or the president. And the bottom line is, if this is kind of a move to put CNN and Acosta front and center so we're talking about it so it drives ratings, it ain't working. Because that network has lost viewers, and you compare it to October 2017 and October 2018. And remember, October 2018 had the Kavanaugh hearings, which was a ratings juggernaut for a lot of people. They lost viewers by nearly 10%. They're getting beat. And this isn't a joke. I'm not being snarky. I'm just a guy who's like reporting sports scores. They're getting beat in total viewers by the Hallmark Channel, which is really hard to do.
I don't care what they do over there. In all seriousness, they claim that they are journalists. They claim they don't have they actually say they don't have opinion shows.
And no, like Don Lemon's an anchor and Chris Cuomo's an anchor and Anderson Cooper's an anchor. And then all your opinion from those three guys. Just own it.
You know, and it's funny because people all the time will say, well, you're not a journalist. I say, I don't claim to be. Right. But I do claim to be a talk show host. And I can play for you right now. I can literally go in the archives, radio and TV, and play hours and hours and hours of coverage over the years of me doing straight reporting on important news stories. No opinion, straight reporting, be it about a war or a hurricane, all sorts of issues.
Right, but
I also, as a talk show host,
your opinions most. That's why people are tuning into you.
Okay, but wait a minute. I would argue that we do investigative reporting. Obama, his radical associations, his record after 8 years that nobody else talks about.
Sure.
More recently with the deep state. So we do investigative reporting. Sometimes we do straight up reporting. We absolutely do opinion with me telling everybody I'm a conservative.
You're like a newspaper.
I'm the whole newspaper. They're supposed to be the news. Yeah.
Not enough sports, in my opinion, which I used to be a sports columnist. So you ever need anybody to talk about the?
You know, I can never win with you. I just, you know, you always, there's always something. I can't please everybody. Go ahead.
Anyway, look, the president took 68 questions during that press conference last week. I mean, that's a lot from 35 reporters. I'm not very good at math, but I believe if you divide 68 by 35, it comes to about 2 per reporter. And Jim Acosta tried to ask 4 different questions after, as you said, I want to challenge you, then went into a debate, then gave a lecture on what an invasion is and what isn't. And after 2 questions, every other reporter says, okay, well, that's the way it's always been when you go through Reagan, Clinton, Bush, Obama, doesn't matter. You basically get one question. One follow-up, maybe, and that's it. Acosta, after 4 questions, doesn't give up the microphone the way my 3-year-old doesn't give up a lollipop when it's time to go to bed. So how could anybody defend him at this point? And all I ask, and it's not going to happen, but I'll throw it out there anyway, it just takes one major White House correspondent, just one, to say, look, Jim, what you're doing is hijacking these press briefings. You've been doing it for 2 years. There are some serious reporters in this room like John Roberts from Fox or Jeff Mason from Reuters or John Carl from ABC, people trying to get answers to inform the American people, and you're making it about yourself every time so you can go viral and expand your own brand. Please stop. We don't appreciate maybe the way the president's talking about us. Okay, that's fine. But we also don't appreciate the way that you're making this about yourself. If it, one reporter did that within that room, I think you'd hear a whole different narrative. But the hive mentality and the fear of reprisal, probably from their employer and from others in the industry, you're not going to see anybody do that. But, hey, one can ask.
And it's such a good point. And I think Law and Crime made a great point on this, too. If Acosta's reporting were the real reasons Trump, you know, he wouldn't have called on him in the first place. And by the way, he has been repeatedly rude to Sarah Sanders. The president was dead on accurate about all of that. Quick break. Right back. We'll continue. Joe Concha from The Hill. All right, as we continue with Joe Concha, he's a media reporter, columnist, now actually TV star for The Hill. Where is there a constitutional right? It's free press. Nobody's saying he can't report what he wants to report. He doesn't have to be in the room. They can watch it on TV. It's being published. But the idea that they think they have a right, not only they think they have a right to be constantly, consistently agenda-driven and rude to the president of the United States. And I don't think they have a particularly strong case here. And CNN can make all the legal arguments they want that the White House acted improperly and how they are suspending Acosta's access. But you know what? You know, certainly the White House has the ability to say, no, where you're being rude to the president of the United States. And
right.
But by the way, if I did this to Obama, just think for a minute.
Oh.
What would the reaction be?
Yeah, I got an example for you. So Major Garrett was with Fox, went over to CBS, and he asked President Obama in 2015 about the Iran deal. He says, well, how could you make this deal and be content with the fact that there's still four Americans imprisoned over there? Like, why weren't they included in the deal? Perfectly legitimate question. Nothing wrong with that. And Major Garrett got eviscerated by CNN's Dana Bash and Don Lemon and several other people over at that network for being disrespectful to the president for actually asking that question. Bill Maher actually said, you know what, Major, you should have just called him the N-word for asking such a question. So when anybody remotely challenged the other president and asked a tough question, they were seen as being disrespectful, hecklers. Now, Jim Acosta does it, he's being praised as somebody who's just seeking the truth and asking aggressive questions. But here's the bottom line.
It didn't seem like an aggressive question. It seemed like he starts with a debate. A premise that is, in my view, false. He wants to debate the president. He wants to ask four questions, not one question.
And not to get information, to evoke a response, right? And then, so I've argued, well, maybe they should just box him out, because during President Obama's first 36 press conferences, he called on Fox 14 times, which when you're the number one news organization in cable news, you probably don't want to shut out 22 times. But he did it, and you didn't hear Fox saying, well, we have a constitutional right to be afforded a question, and we're going to sue you. They just took it on the chin because I guess, well, you know, elections have consequences, and he doesn't like Fox all that much. So, this is a mess, and it's all just to draw attention, and I think it's going to end where – either the White House, I think the White House is actually going to hold firm on this because they're probably on firm grounds. And it's all going to come down to the judge that's assigned in this particular case.
What if the White House decided that they want to move everybody out of that press room and put them across the street?
They proposed that, Sean, in the beginning of the administration.
That's why I'm asking it. Yes, sir.
Yeah. And they said, well, we can't move it out of the White House. That's against decorum. Well, a lot of things have been against decorum. I think I told you this idea a while back. I say rotate in different reporters. White House press corps gets Mondays, business reporters Tuesdays, foreign press Wednesdays. Take a day off Thursday and then rotate one of those three back in on Friday. And this way you're going to get different questions about different things, particularly the economy and international affairs. Get a little more sizzle in that room. Take out the cameras, by the way, because that's where the grandstanding happens. Recorded, of course, but don't play it live. And I think that would help. It would manage the situation. It wouldn't solve the problem, but at least it would manage it, that's for sure.
All right, great analysis. Joe Concha, media reporter, columnist, and now TV host for The Hill, .com. Thank you so much for being with us. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. I'm actually really excited. I used to love this show by Mike Rowe called Dirty Jobs. As we continue, Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern. We got a great show tonight. Tell you about that in a second.
The unemployment numbers are down. Mm-hmm. The importance of getting jobs. Why is that so important for our country?
Well, it's our identity. You know, what we do has always been the centerpiece of who we are. And for the last 10 years, my foundation has been focused on opportunity that actually exists.
Right.
So there's this narrative, we've discussed it a thousand times, that the reason people aren't working is because opportunity's dead. That's just not the case. We have nearly 7 million jobs now that are available.
If you want a job, there's a job waiting for you.
Well, 75% of them don't require a four-year degree. They require training. So my little foundation has always been focused on that. My grandfather, who was kind enough to bring her into the world, or at least in part, was an electrical contractor, lived right next door to us. So I had a front row seat growing up to the kind of work ethic and the kind of skill that built our country. You know?
Is that your grandfather?
Where is he? Yes, that's your dad. That's your dad, Mom, and that's Nana right there.
And which brings us to a full introduction. This is Peggy Rowe right here. And that's morning. You were kind enough to... How did you get your son to write the foreword on your book? That was a big coup. He's famous.
I know he is.
Right.
But he's still my son.
Right.
And he does what I tell him to do.
Right. What was he like when
would
he
you
was
like
little?
A book?
Yes, we love the fact that you are now 100% employed promoting this book. It's called About My Mother.
Yes, it is. It is about my mother. About growing up with a mother who was always in charge. Always in charge.
What does that
and a
mean,
funny
always
woman.
In charge?
She made all the decisions. All the decisions. She told me which political party I was in mm-hmm. when
which,
I was,
which was
when I was little.
Which party were you
don't
in? Well,
tell
that's
him,
personal.
Don't tell him. Don't tell him.
But now,
everything.
Now I think for myself.
How important is that to be a strong mother? What'd you learn from her?
She was honest, first and foremost. Like I say, she was always in charge. She made all the decisions. We didn't do anything unless it was okay with my mother.
Get to your calls here in a few minutes. 800-941-SEAN is our number. You want to be a part of the program. I know people get sick of when I talk about my jobs that I've had. Paperboy at 8, dishwasher at 12, short order cook at, well, I did steaks and lobsters, so maybe not short order, at 13, busboy, 14, 15, waiter, bartender, and then my years in construction as a house painter. I learned how to hang wallpaper, made a lot of money doing that, laying tile, framing houses, doing roofing and reconstruction. It was, you know, over two decades of my life. And I was just obsessed with Mike Rowe's show about dirty jobs. And because I felt like, you know, look, I even worked in a shipyard once. It was a pretty dirty job at times. And I see these crazy jobs that he goes see. And it fascinates me to see the hard work, the lives of other Americans, what they do to support themselves and their families. It's amazing. It's fascinating. Things that we don't know about other people. Anyway, Mike Rowe is back with us. And believe it or not, his mom is with us. This is amazing. He brings his mother with us. And he's authored a new book, About My Mother. True Stories of a Horse Crazy Daughter and Her Baseball Obsessed Mother, a memoir from the book. Anyway, welcome both of you to the program. Mike, how are you?
Sean, everything is great, but let me just set the stage for you right now. We are stuck in crosstown traffic. I'm in an SUV with my parents. My mom has just eaten a hoagie. She's sitting here next to me, thrilled.
By the way, people in New York, are you in New York? They don't know what a hoagie is. That's a Rhode Island term.
Yeah, well, it was some sort of meat thing wrapped into some sort of bread thing, and my poor mother.
It's called a sandwich. It's called a. It's called a. I don't know, what does Subway call it now? I don't even know.
A foot long, whatever it is, my mom destroyed it, and now most of it's gone from her mouth, so she's ready to speak. Mom, say hey to Sean Hannity.
Hi, Sean Hannity. How are you?
Now, hi, Peggy Rowe. How are you? Now, you've got to be so proud of this crazy son of yours, but also, so you write this book about true stories of a horse-crazy daughter, her baseball-obsessed mother, and, you know, a pretty fascinating life with this crazy son of yours.
Well, what can I say? It's just part of my life. My mother was part of my life for, 70? How many years? 70 years?
Yeah.
And Mike's been part of my life for 56 years now. And if it weren't for Mike, I don't think I would have published this book.
And if it weren't for Mom, I wouldn't be sitting here in
You wouldn't even. You would. If it wasn't for Mom and Dad, you wouldn't be here, period. Let's be very blunt and honest about this.
Well, it's true.
Well, you know, it's funny because I think we just had Veterans Day yesterday, and I was talking about how we don't have any freedom. We don't have any liberty. We don't even have a country. But for all those people that bravely, they sacrificed they put everything on the line. I love people that put everything on the line with heroism and courage and just, you know, they do what needs to be done. Forget Washington. It's the heart and soul of America is the people that get up every day, shovel coffee down their throats, get their kids dressed for school, pack their lunch, race out, do their 10, 12, 14 hours, you know, cook something as quickly as they can, do the homework with the kids, pass out from exhaustion. You know, the ones that obey the laws, play by the rules, pay taxes. They're the ones, Mike, that make this country great. You covered them with Dirty Jobs. That was my favorite show. Why did you stop hosting it?
Well, we did 300 of them, and there was a genuine concern that I was going to collapse permanently. but look, believe it or not, never say never. It wouldn't shock me to see Dirty Jobs come back around because
I'd love that. I would want to do. That's a show I would want to do myself. That's how much I love it.
Careful what you wish for. Careful what you wish for. If I'll make you a deal, if you want to switch careers for a couple of months. I'm standing by.
By the way, you really want all the bad press I get? People like you. People love you. They don't love me. I have some people that love me, but I have a whole group of other people that would love to hear the news Hannity's dead being reported at the top of the hour news. Trust me.
Well, listen, I'm not sure what to say to that, except that the only person I've ever met on planet Earth who was universally loved by every single person who ever met her is trapped in this SUV with me right now. It's my mother. And that's, I mean, I'm not even, obviously I'm biased, but I'm sitting here. You've been in the book business a long time. She's going to the top of the charts, Sean, and she's
She beat Bob Woodward's book in sales. That blew my mind. I was like, that is awesome. I thought that was great. How did that make you feel, Peggy?
Oh, my golly. I was beyond excited. That was great. And I might do it again. Who knows?
I hope people go buy the book just for that reason. And you wonder, Sean, why I have enemies.
She's going to be 81 years old in 2 weeks. Or something like that. Well, when is your birthday? January or something.
January.
How could you be 56 years old and not know your mother's birthday? What's wrong with you?
I'm under a lot of pressure, Sean. Okay, I host a lot of high-pressure shows, and it's very hard for me to remember obvious things. But
right.
I know this much. I know this much is true. The divide in the country will never, ever go away unless we find things that still unite us and truly join us. Motherhood is somewhere on that list. And what my mom has done, whether she meant to or not, is prove it. She's written a book that proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that decency is alive and well in households from sea to shining sea. You just have to look for
it. The American people are the best. It's the people that do all those crazy jobs that you would cover on your show. Let me ask you that question. What are the craziest, dirtiest jobs of all those 300 episodes?
Well, look, I mean, it's very difficult to compare, you know, a bridge builder with a skull cleaner or an opal miner.
I couldn't be a bridge builder because I would freak out at the height.
No. You think you couldn't do it, but if you compare it to mining opals, which involves being lowered down.
I wouldn't want to do that one. By the way, I fell off a roof three stories once in the middle of
web. That explains a lot, Sean.
You know, it's the moment I woke up and became a conservative and I busted my arm. Literally, I hit the ground and imagine from your elbow, from my elbow down, was totally disconnected from my arm and dangling. And and interestingly, I went and I snapped it perfectly back into place.
Good.
That's true story.
You've got to write a book called "I Fell Off a Roof and Became a Conservative."
It's true. I mean, by the way, I bet your mother's a conservative. Are you a conservative, Peggy?
Don't sell him.
In some respects,
no,
I
Peggy.
Am.
Don't listen to him. He doesn't even know
don't
your birthday. He's not selling your book. I am. Tell me.
In some respects, I am a conservative, yes.
Okay, yeah.
In some respects, I'm not. Listen to me, Sean.
Yes,
there
ma'am.
There is no hate. There is no hatred in my book. My book is kind of a feel-good book. It's humorous, and it has 19 stories in it that we can all relate to. If you have a mother, you can relate to my stories. You can read my stories and say, hey, my mother was like that.
You know, I do miss. I lost my parents. My father, 6 months. I'm in my 23rd year at Fox. 6 months after I started there. There's hardly a day that I don't think about them.
You
know,
you can relate to my book.
Oh, but I was an incorrigible child. Was Mike an incorrigible child?
No, he really wasn't. He was a rule follower.
Oh,
he was no.
We wouldn't have been friends. We would not have been friends.
I wouldn't have allowed him to play with anybody like you.
No, you would listen. There were a lot of kids that weren't allowed to play with me, and I don't know why I was so. My mother would say, "Don't leave that house." And my mom, by the way, was a prison guard. Just so you know, she was a pretty tough lady. But I'd look at her and say, "You can't stop me," and I'd walk out. It's horrible how I was, and Sean, I don't know why I was like
Sean,
that.
Sean, let me just explain what's happened. All right, this is the power of my mother. From an SUV trapped in crosstown traffic, she's got you to reveal that you fell off a roof, became a conservative. Yeah. You're sharing secrets in your life. She literally got you on the couch over a cell phone from an SUV.
A lot of people have been saying for years I need to be on a couch. So, maybe I'll just call your mom once a week and we'll have conversations with her. Remember David Letterman used to put his mom on all the time?
Sure.
Your mother sounds a lot like my mother. I think my mother could have been a prison guard if she wanted to be. But as it was, she was a homemaker and raised two children. But she had the wherewithal to control the circumstances around her. She knew how to make decisions, and she could be a little bossy. Was your mother a little bossy?
Oh, tried to be. But here's the thing, the wonderful thing about my parents is, and she worked many 16-hour shifts. I mean, and they did it for their kids. They literally, no new cars. The first new car I think they got was I was in ninth grade. No vacations. Private schools for their kids, and I owed them more than I gave them, to be blunt, you know, if I'm going to be truthful. But in the end, you know, I realize they were wonderful people, just amazed, but far better than I could ever be.
You know, that's the interesting thing about my book, which, by the way, is called About My Mother.
By the way, what did Mike tell you to say it every 30 seconds? I mean,
No. I don't. This is the first time I've said it. Listen, Sean, do you have a couch? Pull up a couch. I want to talk to you about your mother.
Okay, I'm listening.
Did your mother have any obsessions? Was she crazy nuts about anything like baseball? My mother was crazy about baseball. She embarrassed me every day of baseball season.
You know, she actually used to be a big crocheter, and she'd make me these hideous, ugly sweaters and give them to me. I'm like, Mom, I'm not wearing that thing anywhere. It's so mean. But she loved it, was good at it. I am ruining my career here. Mike's the greatest son in the world, and I'm horrible, but I've got to run. Mike Rowe, we love you. Thank you. Peggy, you are a delightful, wonderful woman. Made me laugh all day. About My Mother, True Stories, Horse Crazy Daughter, Her Baseball Obsessed Mom, a memoir, Amazon.com, Hannity.com, bookstores anywhere. Mike, I need to see you soon. I'd love to do dirty jobs with you.
Careful what you wish for, brother. And I'm next time we do it in person, you just, by the way.
What?
It's been decided. My mother is, my mom is now America's grandmother. Thanks to you. Congratulations.
Yeah, well, I remember I was the incorrigible one. Good luck. She's going to have a lot of trouble reining me in. Thank you, guys. Good to talk to you. Peggy, God bless you. You're a wonderful woman with a great heart. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Sean. This was fun. And good luck in the future.
Thank you. You too. All right, we've got Acosta. We have Democrat infighting. We have more troubles down in Florida, now in Georgia. Pam Bondi, Marco Rubio, Greg Jarrett, Monica Crowley, Jesse and Jessica, Matt Gaetz, 9 Eastern tonight. Thanks for being with us. See you back here tomorrow.